Hello, I'm Lauren Tafiro, and I'll be doing the opening words. If there is to be peace in the world, there must be peace in the nations. If there is to be peace in the nations, there must be peace in the cities. If there is to be peace in the cities, there must be peace between neighbors. If there is to be peace between neighbors, there must be peace in the home. If there is to be peace in the home, there must be peace in the heart.
Hi, I'm Patrick Balaguer. I've been a member of this church as long as I can remember. Please join me in a prayer attitude of reflection and prayer. All of all, love of all love, peace of all peace, depth of depth. So often, in the midst of all we do as we are washing dishes, sending email, going to work, and doing all the things that we do in day in and day out, we can forget that our time here on this earth is both a gift and a miracle. Not let us forget, because sooner than we think, a tomorrow will come and it will be our last tomorrow, and we have missed the miracle. We will have emailed and worked and complained and watched TV through the miracle. We will have let the sunrises, the fresh air, the warmth of a bed, the taste of our orange juice, the first snows, and the cricket chirping slip by as we go about doing all of our so important things. We will have let our pain and struggles, our tasks and achievements, and our accumulations of things obscure the enchantment and richness that can be life. Love of all love, peace of peace, depth of depth. Let us find the holy in all that makes up our life. Let us slow down, stop doing, and learn to simply be. May we find the holy in our coffee, in the spider whose lovely eight legs carry her effortlessly over her web, in the kiss goodnight, in the hot meal, fuzzy blanket, and in the chill of the dark night air. May we be seekers and makers of the holy. Amen and blessed be.
Hello again. My name is Lauren Tafiro, and I've been coming to this church since I was born. Worth is defined as the quality that renders something desirable or valuable or useful. This intrigued me and got me thinking about worth, and what exactly is that spark that gives something worth or value or makes it desirable? My original instinct was that worth is placed upon something by a person who directly benefits from it. After all, why would someone desire something unless it was beneficial to them? This led me to think about things like cars and houses and other things that are commonly referred to as having a high value. This is unsettling for me because this high value list excludes many wonderful things in life that cannot be given a monetary value. Things like joy, like love, and hope. For me, these are the most important things in life, and yet they are missing in many people's concepts of things that have value. At my high school, I had the opportunity to do a senior capstone project. I chose to work with a local nonprofit organization called the Miracle Foundation. This foundation's goal is to empower orphans in India. Nonprofit organizations like the Miracle Foundation are prime examples of groups of individuals who have dedicated their lives to those exceedingly important intangible aspects of life that can't be given a monetary value. Shortly after my capstone, I had the pleasure of hearing the founder, Caroline Boudreau, speak at a benefit for the foundation. She came up to me afterwards and told me, "You are going to see the end of poverty in your life. I won't, but I will work for the rest of my life towards it, and then you can finish it off." It was obvious that Ms. Boudreau was tremendously motivated by hope. Her life was rich with hope. It is this sort of intrinsic motivation that I hope to achieve in my life. It is this kind of hope that is the most value to me. It is this sort of hope that leads to joy, this kind of joy that leads to love. This kind of love will give worth to my life well beyond any physical measure of value. Those like Caroline Boudreau, who work for nonprofit organizations, inspire me to look at the things that are really important and of worth to the world. These people have chosen to live lives that are focused on the good that they are doing for others, not on how much money they are getting paid. They dedicate their lives to helping those who need their help. In exchange, these people live lives that are rich in hope, in joy, and in love. Imagine what the world would be like if everyone chose to live their life this way. I will work for the rest of my life towards creating a world like this, and those who follow me can finish it off. I think that our efforts will be more than worth it.
My name is Natalie Houshins, and I have been going to this church since I was born as well. I took AP Economics this past semester. The class was incredibly dull to me, even though I really liked the teacher. Mr. Youngblood really did try to make it engaging, but despite his valiant efforts, I simply could not get excited about the subject. In fact, now that I've already taken the AP test for it, I couldn't say that I remember anything from that class. It's all a blur of watching the clock and checking my email on my phone. However, there is one concept that sticks out to me. One that I can remember. It made the class worth it, if you will. That concept is opportunity cost, what you give up in exchange for something else. This was quite interesting to me, and in my opinion, the most useful thing he taught us all semester. I began to think about what I was doing and the money I was spending in a whole new light. Instead of just watching TV or getting on Facebook all day without thinking twice, I thought about what I was giving up, what I could be doing instead. It definitely made all my actions have more weight and my choices much more important. However, thinking and doing are two very different things, and I still have spent many hours since then in front of the TV and on that cursed Facebook. But to me, those choices aren't very important. Deciding between watching TV or going swimming is so minor that when I choose the less active action, I don't feel so bad. But this concept, opportunity cost, didn't just affect my little day-to-day what-to-do-with-these-next-4-hours decisions. I really started to think about my future again. I have wanted to go into the arts as a career, specifically theater, since I was 9 years old. I actually hadn't really thought about it since then. I knew that's what I wanted to do, but I hadn't really, really reflected on everything my career choice entailed until I was presented with the words opportunity cost written in blue marker on Mr. Youngblood's dry erase board. Those two words and the discussion about them that followed sent me into a spiral of questions. Was this what I wanted? What was I giving up to pursue this? Am I good enough to be successful? Why am I doing this? And for once, I didn't have the answers. I, the girl who always raises her hand in class, the girl who feels comfortable giving advice to her friends when they ask for it, the girl who writes homilies for her church in hopes of enriching the congregation's lives, couldn't answer myself the most important questions of all. I was deep in thought, confused and disheartened. Life's realities had hit me, and I couldn't stop thinking about starving in New York, being rejected, and eventually having to work in an office. The cost of what I was doing, pursuing a career with a low rate of success and little money to be had, was becoming clearer and clearer. I thought I'd finally awoken from my stupor, my delusion of what I wanted as a child. And then, life gave me a wake-up call, a little cold water in my face, a slap on the cheek to remind me of what was actually real, what existed in my heart. I was in my car, listening to music, thinking about school, boys, and other random silly things, when a very important and poignant song came blasting into my consciousness. I have this theory that because I spend so much time with my iPod, it has become psychic about what I need to hear. So there I was, driving, letting life and the buildings around me pass by. Then Barbra Streisand came belting through the speaker, singing, "Don't Rain on My Parade." I immediately turned up the volume and started to sing along, albeit pretty poorly compared to Babs' fantastic rendition. I realized, as I was singing, that even though I may not be cut out for musical theater, expressing myself like this makes me happier than anything else in the entire world. This is what I want. I want to be an artist. I want to exist in the world like this, and see through the lens of someone who is interpreting what it means to be human. I want this to be my life. Listening to Barbra as Fanny Bryce singing about how nobody is going to stop her reminded me that what I would have given up had I not decided to pursue theater would have cost me much more than money and stability. I would have given up on what I love. My opportunity cost would have been immeasurable. I understood something that I'd always known, but hadn't swum into the surface of my consciousness. In the end, I want to know that I tried. Even if I'm not successful, which is very likely, I have to know that at least I put myself out there and did everything I could to live my dream. To me, there's nothing worth more than that. In the immortal words of Bob Merrill, the lyricist of Funny Girl, the music from which Don't Rain on My Parade came, I gotta fly once, I gotta try once. Only can die once, right, sir? Ooh, life is juicy, and you see, I gotta have my bite, sir. So here I am, about to navigate the seas, trying to have a career in the most unstable and least lucrative industry in the world, but one that I love wholeheartedly and with no regrets. Nothing. I think at least I will understand opportunity cost better than any student in my class. Mr. Youngblood would have been proud.
My name is Sierra Takaru, and I've been coming to this church since I was born, also. In this country, when we hear the word worth, people often think of an item's monetary value, how much we can get for it, what we can trade for it. It's a way of defining an object's value through comparison, oftentimes when the items being compared have few or even no similarities. For example, it's perfectly normal and acceptable for one to compare a car to lots of little green rectangular pieces of paper, or a neighborhood to a potential highway, or an action to a reward. We create levels of value, with certain items on one level, others on the next, and so on and so on, and by doing so, we feel like we have created some sort of justice in our possessions. If we sacrifice something on a specific level of worth to gain something on the same level, we can maintain this idea of fairness. This system, however, tends to be troublesome when defining the worth of people. It gets awkward and uncomfortable to say someone has more worth or value than someone else, and a large part of this is because we've always been taught that two humans are somewhat incomparable. Everyone has their different strengths and weaknesses, challenges and gifts. It's somewhat impossible to put two people side by side and deem one of higher value than the other. And yet, this is something that we as citizens of a society arguably based largely on competition are somewhat prone to do. In businesses and relationships and experiences, there always tends to be a drive to name a winner and a loser. As someone who has grown up in the modern school system, I know for a fact that this is the case. Students scramble to maintain a level of approval or satisfaction from teachers who are by law required to designate their students' worth by assigning numbers or grades of mastery. Sometimes, in a system where their students must be graded on a curve, so only a set percentage can officially obtain mastery on any given assignment. I have seen instances over and over where one student passes and another fails when they have both learned an equivalent amount of information. The student with the higher number gets the praises and the privileges and the honors and the college scholarships, when the other, who has worked just as hard, if not harder, comes out with nothing but miserable and actually debilitating self-doubt. The fact that we can justify ranking human beings' knowledge and intelligence with a number is shocking. And the fact that we use this number to judge, compare, reward, and track youth is really somewhat cruel. And it doesn't stop there. We continue to use numbers to compare one another into the adult years, except now it is in reference to salary, wealth, and number of possessions held. More often than not, it seems that people judge the value of another person based on a compilation of external possessions and numbers that really have nothing at all to do with a person's worth as an individual and his or her integrity as a person. This short-sighted formula for ranking people by numerical value, as if we are all standing at attention as part of some crazy number line, often excludes the people who I would argue make some of the biggest positive differences in the world. The artists, religious leaders, the nonprofit workers, the volunteers, the teachers, who may have nothing much to show for themselves relative to many on that number line. But the good news here is that it is these people who are so fulfilled and wealthy in so many other ways than the physical. Their wealth cannot be measured in a single dimension. These people have a wealth of joy and satisfaction and acceptance that is as beautiful as it is rare. I've been told throughout my life that a person who has reached their maximum potential is someone who is able to live completely as him or herself, whether this is as a businessman, an artist, a teacher, a nurturer, or a revolutionary. These people, the self-actualized among us, have reached a place of peace and satisfaction with who they are and are as confident in themselves as individuals as they are in the people they meet each day. They can walk through life and are able to add value to the world around them strictly through their acceptance of themselves and their acceptance of and appreciation for the unique gifts that individuals bring to our communal table. Each unique individual's gift adds to the value and wealth of us all, gifts that are as beautiful as they are rare. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Aaron Osmer. I'm a little over 18 years old, and I've been coming here for almost 19 years. Think about it. Okay. So I've got about 5 minutes to change the world. And when you've only got 5 minutes, the first rule is to not get technical. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about artificial intelligence. People have been trying to reproduce their own thoughts since decisions were made by vacuum tubes. But we're still dealing with the same problem that we started out with. How do you define good and bad for a computer? In humans, we know that good things cause pleasure and bad things cause pain. But we also have foresight. We know that some pleasant things are bad and some painful things are good in the long run. I can't categorically define things like murder and theft as bad without mentally backpedaling when confronted with specific examples, like euthanasia or the theft of North America by the Europeans. It's those special distinctions that make humans so complicated to emulate. We are the epitome of a concept called fuzzy logic. Now, normally, computers think in binary. Things are either true or they're false. But in fuzzy logic, things are partially true and partially false. Situations are very rarely concrete. So let's look at another example. There's a famous case in the 1970s where Ford was sued for the gas tank placement on the Ford Pinto. The Pinto's gas tank was right at the rear of the car, so if you got rear-ended, sometimes it would explode. It was released during the trial that Ford had actually previously done a cost-benefit analysis to determine if it was worth it to put in a special guard that would protect the tank. But unlike other safety feature cost-benefit analyses that other companies had done, Ford was actually considerate enough to consider the value of a human life by including a solid figure, $200,000. It was probably this very fact that lost in the case. We instinctively know that we can't pin a number on the value of human life. But every day, people go to work to earn their salaries, and students go to school to earn their grades, and people try to boost their credit scores. Or another more personal example for me, most people, again, would never try to put a value on human life. But a chicken is $1.23 a pound at the grocery store. One last example. Probably one of my favorite analogies is something I learned in calculus this year. When you're taking the integral of a function, that's the area underneath the function on a graph, there's almost always a couple ways to do each problem, and each one of them will give you a different answer. Which method you use depends on the specific problem. That's scarily similar to how people work. Depending on the situation, we will apply different logic. I do this all the time. I usually try to follow the utilitarian idea, the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And the environment affects everybody, so I try to drive fuel efficiently. You know, I go the speed limit, I don't floor it when the light turns green. But a couple of months ago, I got a call. One of my friends had overdosed, and I was probably the only one who could go and find her. Suddenly, fuel efficiency didn't really seem that important anymore. I would have been shooting down Mopac in a Hummer if I had one. It's those stressful situations that show me what I really value. But one of the things we almost always value most in society is intelligence. But like in the search for thinking computers, intelligence relies on the ability to distinguish how valuable things are. It's kind of ironic, but it is a little comforting. To be intelligent, we don't need to know calculus. We don't have to be able to program an intelligent computer. We just need to be able to think, to determine for ourselves what we value. It doesn't matter what criteria we use, as long as it feels right. So go be intelligent. Find out why you earn those salaries or those grades. Are you worth $1.23 a pound? For me, no matter how conflicted I get, or how confusing a choice is, the future is always worth it.
Today's Today I hope you smile. Today I hope you laugh. Today I hope you take one more step in reaching your own personal potential. Today I hope you're able to look up into the sky and realize just how small we really are and know that that's all right. Let's all work together to make today a very good day.